I'm Lucy Hobgood-Brown. I'm a Wingham resident, and I'm a co-founder of Hand Up Congo.
And I'm Vera Sistenech. I live in Sydney, and I work with Lucy in Hand Up Congo on an emergency medicine project, and Lucy was kind enough to invite me up to the valley.
I guess then the first place to start, Lucy, is tell us about what Hand Up Congo is.
Hand Up Congo is a very small nonprofit organizations registered in Australia, and but we work with partners in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and we have volunteers in other countries as well who provide their skills and support to our work in Congo.
Give us a little bit more support, skills and support in what kind of areas?
We work in a country of 77 million people that has very few resources, so we work on capacity building projects, and this might be education, it might be women's microcredit, it's medicine, it's agriculture, sustainable beekeeping, which is something Vera can tell you about. And we respond to what our Congolese partners ask us for help with.
Where did it come from? What brought this on?
I grew up in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and my father was born there, and he grew up there. So in 2004, my father said, I want to go back to the village where I was born one more time when I'm still healthy and well enough to travel by canoe, because the only way to get there is in a dugout canoe. So my sister and I went back to the village with him, and we said that we spoke to all the women in the village, and we were just struck by how hard they work and the challenges that they face raising their families. So we thought, what can we do to help these women and to keep the connections that my family has had with Congo? So my grandparents went there in 1912 as American missionaries, and we have over 100 years of connections to Congo. And that's when Hand Up Congo was born. We thought we'd start a small nonprofit, we'd ask our women friends for help, and that's how it got going.
And Vera, what brings you to our community this week?
Well, it's Lucy and the Congo Project, but perhaps I can share how we connected, because that will explain why I'm here this weekend, or this week. And so I'm a specialist in emergency medicine. I practice as a doctor down at St. George Hospital, as well as Bankstown and sometimes Wagga Wagga as well. And I was previously involved in public health and in fairly large sort of clunky bureaucracy in Geneva. So when I returned to Australia, I was really looking for something really grassroots to get involved with, just by way of contrast to what I had been doing. And I bumped into Lucy, literally bumped into her at a social event in Sydney called Under the Canopy of the Sydney Development Circle, and it was a community of people interested in community development. So that's when I bumped into Lucy, and Lucy said, oh, well, I go out to the Congo each year and I bring volunteers, and there are several projects, but I've never done anything medical. Would you like to do something medical? So I said, look, I'm always up for an adventure, but I've never been to the Congo. I speak enthusiastic but lousy French, and it is not my place to tell the Congolese what to do. But let's go and see and learn what the needs are, and my field is emergency medicine. So we went and we really sort of did a scouting project to understand the needs of people there, and that was how this project was born.
So what did you learn?
Oh, well, I had my preconceptions about the Congo, and what I learnt was the needs there are so massive, because the infrastructure of the country and what trickles down to everyday people is really incredibly basic. The government cannot take care of their population like we are taking care of here. It's a massive privilege to live in Australia and have the healthcare system that we do, that is funded largely by taxes. So it was a sort of painful inspiration to see how little people have by way of healthcare. And I felt that, gosh, we can't help but trip over the bar of contribution, because a little goes a very, very long way. So what I did learn is that people are dying of very basic things in the Congo, including diarrhea in children. That's one of the highest causes. Things like stroke, malaria, lower respiratory tract infections, and so on. And people's material access to medical equipment and also to knowledge is extremely limited. And I learned that a little contribution can really help people change their lives and change their community. So I was really inspired by how far a little bit of resource can go and how a very simple and basic organization like Hand Up Congo can make a profound difference. And so that was what I learned and what inspired me to go with Lucy and grow this project.
Now, I take it you've been back since on your own?
Yes, well, never on my own, always with Lucy, because as she has shared, she has a family connection, and really connection is everything in the Congo, especially when you're not Congolese and we are guests of the country. So with Lucy's family history and friendships and what she's invested in, personal investment in terms of relationships there, is what keeps us safe and allows us to do what we do. So I went once with Lucy in 2015, a further time in 2016. We were going to go again this year, but there were some security issues, so we have postponed the medical trip. But Lucy's returning in October to progress the other projects, the community development that is beyond the medical project.
You've talked about what you can see is missing in the region.
Yes.
What sort of work have you been able to do to try and combat that issue?
Yes. So we work with the Protestant University of Congo, which is a very well-respected university that trains doctors across the Congo. And they have a training network across the country. So we have been to those sites of training, been to the hospitals, and trained the doctors, nurses, and medical students there in basic life support, advanced life support, resuscitation, pediatric rehydration, airway management, ECG reading, and other sort of time-critical interventions, which is the definition of emergency medicine. But also, I think, importantly, and this is, I think, the real contribution of Hand Up Congo, is to connect the Congolese with the global communities that are already doing lots of training and have lots of resources across the world. So to connect them with the African Federation for Emergency Medicine, to connect them with the Australian Emergency Medicine community, as well as the World Health Organization and others. So I feel that in a place where people can't just jump on the internet, the information revolution has not arrived. So people can only access things and connections via people, via physical communication, telephone, relationship building. And I really feel that for a small entity, Hand Up Congo, to have done that has been a tremendous achievement, particularly of Lucy and the organisation.
You spoke before about issues around things like what we would see as simple illness, things like diarrhoea, killing young people. What have you been able to do to try and teach people about how to handle that?
So with that in particular, so we do spend nearly a whole day about, first of all, how to recognize moderate or mild from very severe dehydration in children, and also how to carefully do simple calculations of how much fluid they're actually missing. But above all, you can imagine if there's a young child who comes in grossly dehydrated, we're talking about having lost about 15% of its body weight through water loss. It's extremely difficult to get an intravenous cannula, a drip in, to their arm or even their scalp. And so we do teach putting a cannula into a bone. And although that sounds dramatic, it's actually life-saving. So you don't need to look for a vein. You just put it in a leg or an arm, and then you can begin to do resuscitation and fluid rehydration there. So it's about, one, recognition, two, teaching a technique that wasn't previously available and actually easier than what they had to do previously, and also to then do careful calculations of not how to over-rehydrate and therefore cause harm, but actually rehydrate in an appropriate fashion over the appropriate period of time. So it's really the transmission of knowledge and also of a tiny bit of technology as well. And we bring these intraosseous needles out with us and distribute them as well.
In training in my industry, I'm always looking for ways that the learning pathways, the lessons can go both ways.
Yes.
I'm interested, do you feel like you learnt anything about your industry in Australia from people in DRC?
tremendously. And this is what makes me go, again, selfishly, is a deeply life-enriching experience. And it's incredibly humbling to see the technique of doctors when you don't have fancy equipment. So, for example, I witnessed quite a complicated hysterectomy. And in Australia, a hysterectomy, by the end of the operation, you'll have a huge mound of waste product from sutures and swabs and so on. But in the Congo, because there is very limited access to blood, so the technique is extremely fastidious and very, very careful. Every single tiny, tiny capillary practically is tied off because they don't have something called diathermy, which is using a burning thing to burn little blood vessels. And at the end of the operation, there is just a handful, less than a kidney dish of waste. Because swabs are carefully used, wrung out, and used again, and not just tossed away. So people's technique, surgical technique, is just tremendous because they cannot afford to lose blood and then just transfuse. And not that doctors here are sloppy, they're not, but it's just another level altogether. And they just use everything to the absolute end of its usefulness. So sutures, they're used right up to the hilt of the needle because no thread can be wasted. So I've learned that in a low-resource setting, technique is tremendous. Maximal utilization of what you have there is tremendous. But not only that, what I was very impressed by as well is that, yes, people may be poor, but their routine of going through getting consent from the patients, telling their families what's going on, reassuring them that if you've got any reservations, you know, just ask us. And that process of consent and accountability does not take money. It just takes the will and the respect which they do have there. And I was very, very impressed by that.
Lucy, tell me, have we got other projects that you guys are working on outside of healthcare?
We do, and we tap into our many volunteers' special interests, for example. And Vera, who is an emergency medicine specialist, is also a beekeeper on the side. And she harvests her honey in Sydney, packages it in jars called Kuji Bees for Congo. We sell that honey, and the money goes to our emergency medicine and our sustainable beekeeping project. So that's a project that came as a catalyst by Vera. And we then connected with Congo beekeepers, and they did training in the village where we work. We have pygmies and other farmers who live in this village, but with no income generation. And so trainers went in June, trained them on sustainable beekeeping practices. And when I go back in October, I'll be seeing the results of that. The first hives and bee suits and other resources that Sydney beekeepers, including Valley Industries here in the Manning Valley, have provided us with. And so we've got beekeepers around Australia and the world cheering us on with this one project as an example of capacity building.
Vera, did you expect that you would end up taking both of your passions, I guess, beekeeping and your medical work over there?
Not at all. And in fact, Lucy's great because the volunteers that go out with her, Lucy loves to find out their interests and reflect them in the Congo. So she knew that I was interested in bees, and I said, oh, I'd love to see how the Congolese keep bees. And it's a very, very different system, but it's not sustainable in that because it takes resources and training to understand how to use the frames, the boxes, and that sort of thing, so and to learn how to harvest the honey without killing the hive. Whereas in the Congo, it's still very much sort of the Winnie the Pooh, you know, beehive style,
right,
where you actually have to destroy the hive to get the honey out, simply because they don't have the technology there. I haven't learned how to do it with the frames and so on. So when we were traveling to deliver a medical training somewhere, we just literally stumbled upon a sign that said honey. So we stopped, and we were very fortunate to meet a beekeeper who actually had been trained by a Belgian NGO some years ago, and in that particular area had trained up 800 beekeepers to keep bees and make honey in a sustainable way as a source of nutrition and also as a form of livelihood. Then with this sort of serendipitous meeting, Lucy saw the opportunity to raise funds to fly this beekeeping training team to the very remote village that she grew up in. And so that's how that was born. But it was entirely by chance. And so that was a very fortunate sort of offshoot of the emergency medicine project.
I'm interested, though, in all of these kind of roles, it becomes a lot about capacity building, doesn't it, as far as ensuring that the work continues once you're gone.
Yes.
How do you make it possible for them to continue to have the bees without you having to supply all of the tools?
Yes. So we at Hand Up Congo, we've said this sort of internally, we measure our success for the disappearance of the need for us. And to me, that is when a project is successful, when outside help isn't needed anymore. And from the outset of everything, from emergency medicine to the beekeeping and so on, the whole idea is that knowledge is salvation. So we are interested in the transmission of knowledge. And that's why with training, people are taught how to build beehives, and we have photos of the most beautiful beehives built out of bamboo. And I've never seen a bamboo beehive before. I'd love to bring one back and keep one at home. Couldn't get it through quarantine, though, I don't think. It's to empower people. So with local resources, they learn, they can make their frames, they can make their own beehives, they can make their own suits, they can make their own smokers, and they begin to understand how to do it without us. So the little project has sent the trainers to this village once, and they need to go back a further two times to learn about honey harvesting, and then finally the commercialization of honey. So we're sort of one third of the way through the project, but it's fairly new, but it's been pretty exciting to get involved.
Lucy, how can we help?
We have a website, www.handupcongo.org. And we invite people to look at the website for information about our projects and our blog, and they can donate online. And also they can get tax deductibility through Rotary, and they just need to contact us on our website or on our Facebook, and we can let them know how they can help.